Hello and welcome to the Forbes India Cover Story podcast series in association with theindycars.com. My name is Abhishek. While commuting to work, look around you. The number of cars with green number plates is rapidly increasing. India's electric vehicle boom is just about getting started and Tata Motors is leading the charge. But Tata Technologies, the subject of this cover, has a lot to do with it. They do not just EVs, but a lot more. And joining me on the call to talk about it all is Forbes India's cover story author, Naini Thakkar. Hi, Naini. Nice to talk to you again.
Hi, Abhishek. Lovely speaking to you too.
Thank you. So before we start about the subject itself of the cover, Tata Technologies, what does it do? How does it contribute to different arms of Tata's, including electric vehicles, which is the heart of the story that you've written?
So yeah, essentially, I mean, they're part of this very interesting segment called engineering research and development, where what they do is provide end-to-end solutions across automotive, which is their core segment, auto, aerospace, and industrial heavy manufacturing. What they basically do is, look at everything from engineering products for their clients to provide software solutions. So it's end to end. And once they work on the design and engineering of these products, it's then provided to the clients who then, look to manufacture those. So in a sense, it's far more complex than this. But if I were to put it very simply, I think that's a gist of what they do.
Right. And they were listed only recently, weren't they? But they've been around for a while.
Yes, they've been around. Actually, they started off as a segment of Tata Motors in itself. Mm-hmm. Then they split. The company, was a standalone company, which was essentially only serving Tata Motors. And then, given the kind of demand, given the way in which they were the direction in which they were headed to, it turned into a separate company. And then they diversified. And when I think the decision to segregate the company was made, it also acquired a UK-based company called Incat, which was led by the current CEO of Tata Technologies, Warren Harris. So Incat had a lot of international clients as well, existing ones. So they got hold of those as well. So essentially, that's how Tata Technologies that we know of today has been formulated. Until that point, their main focus was essentially auto, and a significant percent of their revenue would come from the Tata Group itself, which has gone down by a lot now.
Talking about diversification, they are into aerospace and industrial heavy industry as well, is what you write.
Industrial heavy machinery, yes.
Ah, right. Sorry, machinery. How do they, and this is anybody who works in auto, if you see, within 2 years, the design changes, new technologies come in, but in the electric vehicle space, it is both formative as well as rapidly changing. So how do these guys in Tata Technologies figure out ways to either launch or make tweaks to existing technologies? Because you also have a section in your story, which is an interesting one, where the challenge was also to convert existing ICEs or internal combustion engines, as we know them as, into electric vehicles. So there's a lot happening here. And how do they figure out what's the next thing that they should focus on and have releases within 12 to 18 months?
No, absolutely. I think that was the most interesting part. And I actually visited their Hinjewadi campus. We dived very deep into understanding exactly how the Tata Motors ICE, which is the internal combustion engine vehicles, which are our regular diesel and petrol cars, to an EV. Because I think Tata Motors came to them saying that, listen, this is what we want to do. And how would you go about it? So the logical way of going about it to a layman would be, okay, just remove the internal segments of everything that's there and then replace it with everything that goes into an EV. But turns out it's not as simple, right? Because there's a lot more that goes into it. The one key aspect is a 300 kg lithium ion battery pack. And I was very lucky to have seen one in person when I went there. And it's massive, and one cannot imagine how big that is. I mean, when you look at a Tiago EV or any of these EV models, you wouldn't think that that's such a massive, battery goes into it. But, the first thing that they told me is that as soon as we added that lithium ion battery, the entire car would topple, because at the moment our ICE vehicles would have the majority of the engine in the front end, right? And the lithium-ion battery goes towards the end of the car, which would mean that the balance would go haywire. So that is the kind of engineering, I mean, it's literally hardcore engineering and design that they had to get into to rewire everything that went in to ensure that the car was as is from the outside, but everything inside is very, very different. So I think it's extremely challenging, and kudos to them for having done in a record time. And usually, just for perspective, what happens is this, of course, is very, very challenging, but and that's exactly why most automotive companies prefer building an EV from ground up, right? Because you can design it as per keeping this particular battery in mind. But obviously these vehicles were built keeping an ICE model in mind. So I think that was the tough part for them. But I think eventually it was a great play for Tata Motors. And I think it's also one of the reasons I think why they're leading in the EV space at the moment in India. So yeah, I think it's super interesting, the kind of stuff that they do.
And when you think of passenger cars, for example,
Yes.
you think of, let's say, Hyundai or Maruti, but somehow Tatas have, in the electric vehicle space, it's more than 70% their share. Is it that they started soon enough, or other players were still wondering whether EV will be the future? Because in Europe, I think starting 2030 or 35, some countries will ban petrol and diesel or other petrol vehicles altogether. So it's going to be all electric vehicles. So others have not caught on as much as Tata Motors has then, you think?
Exactly, and I think it's probably the first mover advantage that they got, right? I mean, they have massive like a great EV range at the moment, and I think in doing so, this entire idea of turning an existing model into an EV, that strategy worked very well for them. And in fact, they were telling me that even the production units in itself, so those haven't changed as well. So the same ones, the same manufacturing facility that would make the ICE models continue to make the EV ones. So they re-engineered that as well to produce EV models as well. So you can imagine how much goes into doing that. And for someone like me who's not see who had never seen something like this in person, I found it extremely fascinating, and imagine how challenging it would have been for them.
And they also are moving into joint ventures. You write one about an agreement that has been forged with BMW and Tata Technologies. And how will that benefit each other? How will it help both players?
I mean, they essentially signed this joint venture with an aim to establish an automotive software and IT development hub, right? Where, they're planning to deliver automotive software, which includes software-defined vehicle solutions as well. So this means that they'll be focusing quite a bit in terms of the design perspective in a sense as well, right? Because and there is, I mean, India has a lot of talent in itself, and I think this gives both of them, I mean BMW, an opportunity to use this wonderful talent that we have here, and Tata Technologies, of course, a wonderful collaboration with a massive international group like BMW. So I think it's a win-win for both of them, and it's not just this joint venture. They've had multiple others as well in the recent past, and all of them seem to be working in their favor. So yeah.
So on one hand, you have technology and expertise that you can borrow
Yes.
and lean on from other, multinationals. What about talent, especially homegrown? Because the kind of change that we are seeing in this space is disproportionate to what we have seen in the past. And you need people on both the assembly lines as well as in the control room. So how does that work? How easy or difficult is it for Tata Tech to attract talent?
So, I think it proves to be a massive challenge for them. And it's a fact, right? I mean, while we have great talent, the biggest problem is that they're not industry ready, right? I mean, one stat that I mentioned in the story as well is that I think there are about 1.2 million engineers who graduate in India every year, but only 20% of them are industry ready. And that's a very, very tiny sum, right? So what they've done is they have a separate segment, like a revenue stream as well, which is under their technology solutions segment, which is essentially education, where they are also providing this as a service and educating a lot of our talent and ensuring that they are industry ready. They're working with many governments, many ITIs to also ensure that this works out. So it's a very tiny segment of their revenue stream, but it definitely is there. And one of the biggest reasons is the fact that we don't have fully industry ready engineers coming out. So I think they have a lovely e-learning platform as well, where people can upskill themselves. And there are, of course, programs that they have for students who are freshers as well. So yeah, it's both ways. And I think, like you earlier rightly mentioned, that this is a very evolving industry. Like, things are changing, and there's new technology coming up all the time. So the constant need to upskill themselves is also very important for all engineers. So yeah.
Right. Quite a few Indian private players are doing this. I think HCL has its own, or Zoho as well, university of sorts where they train freshers first, and then because you have an inbred talent, they get 2 years of free education of sorts. Where of course you have to spend some time in the company. There might be a bond for all you know. I'm not sure, but many companies have started to do that because perhaps the conventional secondary education may not be good enough for them to survive or contribute to the outfits, these outfits then.
Exactly. And I think it's very important. I'm glad that so many companies are doing that because it's very, very necessary as well.
And the last one, you had a chance to speak with Mr. Harris, who's heading the charge at Tata Tech, and he says he's got a lot of work to do. So what are two or three things that he will be focusing on and his team?
So, at the moment, the EV space in itself is massive, and they see that, they have like an edge within automotive and particularly in EV, because that's what's really taking off worldwide, not just in India. So that is one space he wants to continue growing in, with new partnerships, new clients, etc. And in addition to that, there are some, other sort of segments, one of them being semiconductors, where again the Tata Group has a massive, massive play. So he feels that, I think it's essentially all adjacent, right? Like, everything goes hand in hand for them. So one is communications, and the other might be semiconductors as well. So it's still a work in progress, but yeah, he did speak about how they might actually look into the designing and engineering for semiconductors as well. So that should be an interesting play for them.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Nani, for your time on this podcast and for the cover as well. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Abhishek.
All you listeners, you can get this podcast on ForbesIndia.com or any other app that you use to download your podcasts. And to have someone call you for a Forbes India subscription, message Forbes to 51818.